The tales are depraved and spooky. The drinks they sip are boozy. Tune in and you'll hear a doozy. The Tipsy and Depraved.
Welcome to Tipsy and Depraved. On today's episode, we'll be covering cults. I'll be taking a dive into the Order of the Solar Temple. Ooh. Chelsea is taking on Jonestown, which we hear is a lengthy notes.
Yeah, I got a lot.
And
it's actually the People's Temple. Jonestown is just the place where it happened.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, me, I'm super educated on cults, so I'm all in for learning.
I have a lot for you.
Jackie. Oh, well, I'm excited to learn. Jackie is going to be covering a super recent sex cult, which has unfortunate ties to one of my favorite childhood TV shows, so I'll be very upset. And for today's episode, we're drinking a drink called Liquid Sunshine Cocktails. It's Malibu rum, peach schnapps, orange juice, pineapple juice, and grenadine.
A lot of alcohol.
We found this recipe. A lot of alcohol. We found this recipe on 221net.net. Apparently, one cannot find grenadine in Philly, so Chelsea had to make her own. How did that turn out?
It turned out all right. So it's just pomegranate juice and sugar, like equal parts. And you just boil it and then let it simmer for a while.
I like how you say you just boil it and let it simmer for a while. Like, that's a normal thing that we're going to do.
Homemade grenadine.
I did it with the simple syrup. Because simple syrup is just water and sugar, mm-hmm. and you boil it till it gets a little syrupy.
So if you want to make your own mixers from scratch, Chelsea is the girl to talk to.
I got you.
Got all the tips.
I do, and yeah. They're all from Google. Thank you, Google. I was so frustrated, though, because I went to the liquor store yesterday to pick up the peach schnapps. They don't have any mixers besides, like, margarita mix. And I was like, well, this is not helpful at all. And I went to another store today, don't sell grenadine. And I went to another store, no grenadine. And I was like, bye. And so in the middle of Acme, I just Google searched how to make it. And I was like, okay, it's pomegranate juice. And I go and I'm not paying attention. And I grab the pomegranate juice and it's actually pomegranate cherry juice.
Ooh.
Mine has a little cherry kick nice. To it. But it's nice.
So you just made your own drink, basically.
Yeah. Fuck your recipe.
Damn. Well, if you're new here, every episode, each of us tells a story befitting a theme chosen by one of us. This week, I've chosen cults, so you're welcome. Honestly, I thought because I could use my week to chat about something a little less scary than our other two themes
LOL.
We've covered so far, but... But I was sadly wrong, which was upsetting.
Yeah. I think cults are worse.
Yeah.
Like, I was more disturbed doing the research this week. Now, granted, mine's very recent, but I was more disturbed by this stuff than the other two topics we already covered.
Same. Mine has a higher death count than Madame Bathory. And I listened to the 44-minute death cassette recording from Jonestown. So that was a lot of fun. I felt really good after that.
And that's why it's good that you're having a drink right now, probably.
Yes. And I actually like your recipe. I was just joking. It's very good.
I picked good drink for this week. Well, my drink is sadly only tied seriously just because I saw solar in the solar temple. And I was like, liquid sunshine. Theme.
What a match. Here we go. It's better than my first one for torture devices because I couldn't find anything that matched. So I just Google searched red drink and that's the one I found. I'm like, it looks like blood. So here we go. Connection.
There you go. Well, anyway. So let's just dive right into this because I don't know any other way to transition into this. So... Order of the Solar Temple. Here we go. On October 5th, 1994, in less than 24 hours, we had 53 people die in similar ways, burned, shot, a whole bunch of things. All these dead were found to be members of the Order of the Solar Temple, which traced its history to the Knights Templar, which, for if you don't know, it's an organization from, like, the Middle Ages. One of the things they're known for is, like, hunting the Holy Grail.
Isn't that, like, National Treasure? Like, isn't that Nick Cage?
I think that's the Freemasons, but they do... The Freemasons also trace their lineage to these people, the Knights of the Templar, so... I was thinking more Indiana Jones. The Last Crusade.
Gotcha, okay.
That's... When I heard Knights of the Templar, I pictured that old man who was in that cave guarding it. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
I haven't seen it.
Chelsea! What are you doing?
I mean, I'm sure I've probably seen it at some point.
It should have been on recently. Sean Connery passed away. Our national treasure.
He's Scottish.
Okay, a treasure to me.
I'll put it on my list. Like, I feel like I've seen all the Indiana Jones, but I have no recollection of any of them.
But they're such good movies. I'm ashamed.
I love the ride at Disneyland.
Sad. Oh, no.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, no.
I loved it so much.
It's not even a ride. It's a show.
What?
There was no ride at Disneyland. It's a show.
Disneyland. Disney World has the show. Disneyland has a ride.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I've never been to Disneyland. You have.
Then you speak like you know.
I take it back. There's only one Disneyland, and it's Disney World in Florida. Okay, let's be real. One is better than the other.
All right, so it's Disney World, and then that land is called Magic Kingdom. So it's not even close.
No, but it's in Hollywood Studios, which is not even called... Anyway, we're super, super off topic right now. Back to the Knights of the Templar.
Sorry.
But, okay, so this cult was founded by two men. So the Order of the Solar Temple was founded by two men. Joseph Dimambro, and I'm so sorry, I'm not very good with the French names, and Luc Jouret. They combined the Golden Way and the Arch, which were two of the cults they were already leading, into this one big super cult. Both their old cults claimed to have had lineages from the Knights Templar. So I guess it was just some sort of easy melding of the minds to come together.
How many people can be, like, from the Knights Templar? Are they just, like, all interbred together? Are they just, like, a bunch of cousins?
I don't think that they're really tracing their lineage. I think these people just made it up.
Okay.
I'm not sure this is actually, like... I think Luc Jouret he's told people that he found a man on the street or, like, passerby and was suddenly knighted into this, is what he told his followers. So I don't think he was actually even, like, really something. Like,
sounds legit.
Actual lineage. Yeah. They claim to be reincarnations of these people.
Okay.
Which is a strong, like, belief that they had in both of these. They were said to have, like, two really different personalities. And Dimambro was, like, the businessman. Jouret was a doctor. And actually, he was a prominent doctor who was, like, a well-known speaker, public speaker in Canada. So he was, like, the charismatic one. And Dimambro seemed to be, like, the brains and the more manipulative one. Have been a gifted hypnotist, which I thought was super shady off of that. Yeah.
Would you ever be hypnotized?
Never.
Not voluntarily, no.
Never. Not for magic or anything. Why, would you?
Nope.
I don't know. Depends on the circumstance.
That's fair.
It's not even that I'm not even sure if I don't believe in it, but I don't know. It creeps me out too much to even think about it. I think some people's brains are definitely moldable in a way that makes them susceptible to suggestion.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm one of those people.
I think I do really well in a cult.
Oh. As in, like, you were not be susceptible or you would be susceptible?
I think I would. Like, honestly, I really like structure. And if someone gives me structure, I'm like, okay, this is great. Thank you.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, no. But I don't think these are real structures. I think these are half-baked lies a lot of the time, right? Like, they're not. Oh, yeah.
These are all, like, fraudsters.
Yeah.
I think you're better than that, Chelsea.
Thank you. I don't know.
Oh, God. So, eventually, this order consisted of an inner circle of 33 members spread across Canada, France, and Switzerland. And at its height, it boasted over 1,000 members of this cult across different countries and different places. There were several temples and homes built where they held ceremonies and initiations, some of which were filmed, which I found weird since they were said to have been so secretive. And Jouret was also still giving public lectures and speaking in Canada, which I think is how a lot of the members were recruited. But I don't understand how you can be so secretive and then let's film us.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was weird.
It's kind of like how you get people into, like, Fight Club. How do you get them in there when you can't talk about Fight Club? But the members keep growing. It doesn't make sense.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, they said they were super secretive, but yet they were filming their ceremonies. They were, one of the leaders was literally public speaker. And he was basically touting his own beliefs and I guess saying them in some sort of charismatic way that drew people to the organization. But their main belief was that someday the Earth would face a cataclysmic event and would end the world around circa mid-90s. And so their ceremonies were meant to invoke an air of mystery. I guess where that's where the secrecy came in, because even if you were a member, you didn't really even know their, like, full doctrine of beliefs until you hit the highest level of membership. And you wanted to move up so that you can learn the truth, in quotations. They believed in the reincarnation of people and even claimed that to their followers that they were reincarnations of the Knights Templar themselves. Or some articles were saying that Demambro said that he was a reincarnation of Jesus.
That's a bold statement.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Right? And maybe the hypnotism came into play there. Who knows? Right? How would you know? But they would also reveal to their own followers at convenient times that they too were reincarnated knights. But we will get to that soon. So there were three main levels that were marked by capes. So knights in capes. They had different initiations and were sworn in as members. And with each level, you knew a little bit more of the cult secrets. And in order to get to a new tier, you would have to be selected, but also you had to pay dues and give gifts to the leaders. And that last level included some sort of special initiation and, of course, more gifts and dues, members' dues. But it was weird because a lot of prominent people were attracted to this cult, like upper middle class and millionaires. And of those 53 dead in that original killing, was a reporter of a Canadian news outlet, the mayor and his wife of a small Canadian town, the director of Piaget watches, which, if you don't know, these are some fancy watches, meaning dude was rich. And the cult leaders found out about Piaget, the guy from Piaget, and about his job, and, like, immediately took him inside to say he was the reincarnation of Joseph of Arimathea. So basically a huge honor. They give
every
him
time
all
you say
the capes
Joseph.
At once.
Every time you say Joseph, I keep thinking you're going to say Mangala, and I'm like, oh, no.
Who's Joseph Mangala?
We'll cover it eventually, and you will
learn. Oh, God.
He's the worst of the worst.
Okay. Well, my true crime knowledge is showing, which means it's very little.
It's He was like the doctor. I'm going to just tell you so you get the gist of it. He was the doctor of death at Auschwitz.
Oh, okay. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I know what all those things mean. Not completely ignorant. There we go. Well, anyway, so they give the director of Piaget all these capes of the levels all at once in one go because they give him this huge honor, say he's this reincarnated man. And so, of course, this guy pays all his dues up front for the entire year that year.
Smart. Savvy. Savvy. He's an idiot. The cult was savvy. Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm Joan of Arc. Have my life savings.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, eventually things.
This guy is loaded.
Basically.
Get all his money now.
You can just hear the background of like, oh, he's him? Let's pull him in the back. Give him all the capes.
We got this.
Yeah, really. But eventually things begin to like fray at the edges and members begin to challenge the cult as they notice the leaders are using the money taken from the members to maybe live lavish lives that they weren't living when the cult first started. So this is around the early 90s that like their membership starts to drop, their financial contributions start to drop, and their revenue goes from almost like $500,000 in Swiss francs to about $90,000 to like...
Ooh.
Yeah, so these people were making bank, first off. And a lot of the members of the cult start leaving, some saying that some of their, like, apparitions were faked. So during these inner circle ceremonies, religious figures would appear to the members, and religious artifacts would also magically appear. During these ceremonies, one of the ex-followers said that some of these ceremonies were so powerful that it made them fall to their knees in such utter, like, belief that this was real. And during these ceremonies, one ex-member literally said that DeMambro would say that they were truly blessed because this is what they were witnessing, things like appearing before them. But funnily enough, so as a lot of these members are starting to realize some of these things were maybe faked, even it said that DeMambro's own son left at one point, and even though he was found among the 53 dead, some say he left and then may have come back. Who knows? Either way, he was amongst the dead. So on September 30th, 1994, three members of the cult were found stabbed to death in Montreal, Quebec. One of the victims was a three-month-old child found alongside his parents, Antonio and Nikki Dutois. The father was stabbed 50 times or more. The wife's neck was slashed,
Jesus.
And she was stabbed at least 6 times.
That's overkill.
It gets worse. The baby was stabbed 6 times with a wooden stake.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Like a vampire?
Yes. And we'll get to why like a vampire in 2 shakes. But they were killed by 2 other members of the order on basically the orders of DeMambro is what we would think.
Yeah.
Because Antonio was the one who was making the special effects for those ceremonies where people would appear and things would, like the Holy Grail would just magically appear. So coincidence that dude got murdered alongside his wife and child?
Where he could like out them for all their fraud.
Yeah, he started speaking out against them. It's unclear if he's already out of the cult because if he was one of the people who left already. But, like, why did he go back and talk to 2 active members and have dinner with them? Like, it was the whole thing that they were supposed to have dinner with these 2 people, and then that's the day that they got murdered. And DeMambro told the members that the Dutois' new child was the Antichrist. So, hence the wooden stake.
Oh, Jesus.
That's so sad.
Yeah. Freaking horrible. And some say that DeMambro killed them because they named their kid the same as his son, like because he named his kid Emmanuel to be some sort of, he claimed he was some sort of demigod or godlike child or second coming
of
Christ.
Like, isn't that a popular French name?
Emmanuel?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But it would make more sense that he just killed them for outing him and his secrets and making people, sowing kind of discord within the group more so. So anyway, so that took place a couple of days before the mass murder suicide of those 53 people. And also within those last final days, DeMambro recruited 12 of his closest and highest ranked followers, and they recreated their version of the Last Supper, because that's normal.
Totally. I do that every Sunday. With me and my cats.
With you and your cats. Yeah. I don't know. The mass killings were thought to be some sort of mass suicide, but there were so many inconsistencies in the investigation. Apparently, there were researchers who were allowed access to the crime scene, as it were. In this documentary that I watched, one of the researchers found toys and manuscripts and other stuff, and police were slow to seal off the home of that was burned, because, I don't know, for a whole 8 days, anyone could have just walked into this place.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And a former treasurer of the cult said that the police were very focused on their own narrative and wouldn't write down anything she told them that didn't fit into their narrative, which is super shady.
Yeah.
Don't know what purpose that serves. And there was letters sent to the media and police telling the media that members left to live on a star called Sirius. So it was also part of their belief system that they can go live on this star and escape the apocalypse, the coming end of the world, as it were.
Maybe I wouldn't do well in a cult, because if someone was like, and the star, we're going to go live on it, I was like,
Yeah, I'm not sure where you got that you would be good in a cult, Chelsea.
I think once it starts getting weird like that, that's when I'm out. Maybe I do better in like a prison setting.
That's amazing. Side note, in all my research, I came across an article about Norwegian prisons.
Oh, that's the life.
Which was just fascinating.
Honestly, they live better than I do. Take me to there.
Yeah, their prisoners have flat screens. What?
Well, they're more of like a rehabilitation. Like in the prisons in like those areas, they're more of like they actually work on like helping you get better from whatever crime that you committed. They just don't put you in there and like don't assist with like mental illnesses or anything like that. Like they're actually trying to help.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super interesting. They're
not prison for profit like us.
Right.
It's just super interesting though. Even Canadian prisons, I think they just have a 1 foot gate around them. And there's no, like, you could just walk over that.
Yeah.
And escape, basically, but nobody does. Because they're so polite.
So honest.
Except for these people that we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Obviously not true Canadians.
There's always some bad apples.
There's always some bad apples. But, okay, so what was also weird about this murder scene was that they found a gun that could only be loaded with one bullet at a time. And the one gun was tied to 65 bullets at the scene, because not only were these 53 people burned because the house was set on fire after everyone was already killed, they were all shot multiple times. Some 3 or 4, some like 6, but the gun could only load one bullet at a time. And some of the family members and detective were like baffled by this. But if they're all believing that they're going to go to the star, maybe they just went willingly to their deaths and waited patiently to get shot.
Sounds like it.
Can you imagine like sitting in a room waiting your turn for someone to unload a gun several times into you? And if you don't die right away, you have to wait for them to reload. Shoot again.
Yeah, one detective in the documentary I was watching said that it would take you about 45 seconds to reload. So what, you just wait the almost more than half a minute for them to reload the gun and shoot you again? Like 53 people, it would take so long.
Yeah.
Craziness. And there was no fingerprints on the gun either.
Does fire destroy fingerprints? Or is that only water?
I'm not actually sure. I think fire destroys most forensic evidence. So it's a possibility.
Yeah. Jackie, are you looking it up? But I'm not
actually sure.
I am looking it up. It says a good fire investigator will be able to find fingerprints. So it's not true.
Okay.
Most people just wouldn't know. I wouldn't be able to reconstruct them. But today's technology would allow the luxury of someone to be able to put that back together.
Nice.
So maybe. So
probably more like wearing gloves. Something like that.
But are all 53 people, they're not sure how these people died. If they were like waiting to shoot themselves or if somebody else shot them, it's not super clear on what actually happened to them.
Wouldn't that be so much worse if they were just shooting themselves? Like you just are sitting in a room waiting for that shot to go off and then you just go pick up the gun from that person and like shoot yourself.
I mean, that's horrible, but some of them were shot 3 times, 6 times, how can you shoot yourself?
Yeah, someone had to have been shooting them.
Yeah. I don't think they were, I mean, maybe some were shooting themselves, but it's not very clear. It doesn't actually say, and nobody actually brings it up. The one guy, Herman DeLorme, was asked if he defected or he left the cult, and he was asked later if he thinks he would have killed himself. And he was like, I hope not. He thought about it and he was like, I'm scared to say that I probably would have shot somebody. But he didn't actually say that he would have shot somebody that, like, in so many words, but he basically did.
Yeah.
It was really creepy.
Cults, man. It's as like
an ex-cult member.
That's like that weird, like, there's like an actual like mental thing, the cult mentality. Like once you are all in a room with like people and you start becoming like-minded and just get in this like thought process and like these extreme things don't seem so extreme anymore because you all have like the hive mentality. That's what it's called.
Hive mentality.
Yeah. It's weird.
I don't know. It was super weird, but also, so on December 22nd, 1995, another 16 members of the order were found dead in France this time, and all their bodies had been burned again and laid out in a star formation. Two of the dead were two French policemen who were on the scene of the first killings, which leads me to believe they, like, had the inside scoop on some things.
Yeah, that could explain why there wasn't like evidence and they let people like it sit for a couple days.
I don't know. I feel like they had so much money, this cult, even if their members were dropping. Among the 53 were also millionaires, so they could have had money to make things happen.
They could have easily paid. Yeah. Had the police or at least somebody in the force in their pocket.
And then finally in 1997, 5 more were found dead in Quebec, and police discovered later a letter explaining that they had taken this action to ensure their path to the new world, to this star, Cirrus. So basically just, even though Duray and DeMambro died with those first 53 members, which is crazy because they kind of coordinated this over 2 continents, in less than 24 hours.
Yeah. That's wild.
And they just, even though their leaders were dead, they fulfilled this end of the world prophecy, I guess. Creepiest thing is, people think that there is still at least 100 to 500 members of this cult still.
Damn.
Wouldn't that be funny, though, if, like, we're the dumb ones and, like, we die and we just wake up on the star and it's, like, a utopia. It's like, well, damn, we were wrong.
I don't think I would find that funny.
It's like, we're giving all these people shit.
Yeah. It's creepier to me that these people could be listening to this podcast right now. That's really...
Yeah.
where I'm going. I mean, maybe they speak French and...
Bonjour.
No.
Welcome to Les Podcasts.
No. I took Spanish. I only speak Spanish, so I am no help here.
Nope. I did not take French either. I know bonjour. No. And that's because of Beauty and the Beast. Thank you so much.
But that is... That's all I got on the Order of the Solar Temple. I mean, there is just so much to unpack with this cult, from just even their levels to how many members they have. There's micro stories on literally everybody that was involved in this, really. And you could even get into their original cults that they had on their own.
Yeah.
Man, I just can't imagine like sitting around waiting like to get shot or being in that type of situation. Like,
right. And following through with it.
I don't know.
Like, just sitting there.
Yeah.
I know. And I don't understand how everybody was... What was the purpose of setting the buildings on fire? And who set the buildings on fire if we all were shot?
Yeah. Like, there's definitely someone that's still...
Like, who was the last man charged with doing that?
Right.
So many questions.
So many. Ooh, well, that was fun. All right, so today I'm going to be going over the People's Temple of the Disciples of Christ.
So, sorry.
What were you going to say?
I was like, so why is it Jonestown everywhere?
You'll find out. We'll get into it.
Fine.
So there is a lot that goes into the People's Temple, Jim Jones, and Jonestown. So because of the format of this podcast, it's going to be kind of like People's Temple Light. So it is a super well-known event, and I'm only going to be breezing through parts of it. So if you want the full nitty-gritty of this, last podcast on the left does like a 5-part series on Jim Jones and the People's Temple, and they go into extreme details over every part of his life and the aspects of People's Temple. So 10 out of 10 recommend. But anyways, so even though this is a drunken light version of the cult, it is still hefty. I have like 4 pages of notes.
I'm terrified of those 4 pages of notes.
So we're going to start with Jim Jones began attending communist meetings in Indianapolis in 1951 when he was just 20 years old. And he immediately became enamored with Marxism and communism and socialism, all that fun stuff. After becoming frustrated with the McCarthy hearings, Jim Jones wanted to find a way to openly incorporate his beliefs into his life. So he joined the church. In 1952, Jim Jones became a student pastor at the Somerset Southside Methodist Church, which he soon left as he said they would not allow him to integrate Black people into the congregation. While trying to find the next thing, Jim Jones attended a faith healing service at the Seventh-day Baptist Church. While in the audience, he watched as people were willing to buy into the faith healing and give away mass amounts of money during the services. In order to get his foot into the faith healing door, Jim Jones teamed up with a well-known healing evangelist, Reverend William M. Branham, to create a religious convention over June 11th through 15th in 1956. This convention was wildly popular and allowed Jim Jones to create his own church after the success. The name of the church changed a few times before landing on the People's Temple Christian Church Full Gospel. It just...
So he was just like, he wanted to heal people?
No, he was a fraudster and he wanted to pretty much have like a communist utopia world, and he wanted to people to buy into it, so he joined the church in order to get like followings. And he doesn't really get into preaching communism or socialism really that much for over a decade, so he gets people to buy into this faith healing, and then he slowly like uses his charisma to go into the communist, you know, mindset.
So he does the old switcheroo.
Bait and switch.
Yeah. He gets them. He's in the long game.
Yeah.
So.
Damn.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've had that much patience.
I would not at all. No. So after founding the church, Jim started to study the charisma and tactics of Adolf Hitler and Father Divine to learn how to manipulate members of his cult.
Oh, good.
Father Divine. Good
great people to follow. Great people to follow in your footsteps for. Great.
Yes.
So exciting.
I mean, I don't know that much about Father Divine, but I know just a wee bit about Adolf Hitler and, you know, 10 out of 10, do not recommend.
Yeah. I wonder who Father Divine is, though.
I think he was kind of like a faith healer, pastor kind of person. I looked at his Wikipedia page for a moment, and he was definitely just like involved in like the church.
Yeah, and all he says is that he's a spiritual leader.
Yeah. So it's probably just like how to get people to buy into that spiritual like beliefs is like the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Father Divine told Jim Jones that he needed to find / create an enemy to unify the cult. So as I mentioned before, it's important to note that Jones always spoke of social gospel, but he concealed that he was actually preaching communism for over a decade. And it wasn't revealed until like the late 1960s. Jeez. And we're in the 50s still.
Yeah.
So Jim Jones would host faith healing services where he would plant people loyal to him in the audience to be, in quotations, healed.
Smart.
They would be called up on stage where Jones would perform his healing service on them. They would use chicken livers and other animal flesh to pass as cancer or other sicknesses coming out of the body.
Ugh.
It's disgusting. Yeah. Nasty. So through performing these acts to the audience, who were none the wiser that these were all false healings, they totally bought into the fact that he was healing people of like cancer and like all these deadly diseases and stuff.
Was he just pulling livers out of his hat like a magician?
No, I'm pretty sure like the people who were planted would put like the livers in like their mouth and like just pretend to cough them up on stage once Jones was doing his like, and you will be healed, like kind of a deal.
Oh, I'm picturing like he's...
the power of Christ compels you.
I am picturing so much so a hat and a liver coming out of it like a bunny instead.
No. And it's just like a chicken liver, so it's not that big. So when they like cough it up, it looks just like this gross fleshy thing.
Oh, you know what I'm picturing as a liver? Liver and onions that large.
Oh,
coming out of somebody. Coming out of somebody.
A human liver just like slides out of someone's mouth. How nasty would that be?
I mean, when you eat liver and onions, isn't it cow liver?
Oh yeah, that's true. Why did I think it was
human? I don't know. You're
oh my
you're,
god,
you've been researching too much of this. You're going towards cannibalism right now. I don't know.
Oh no.
Too many pink / drinks.
Yeah. These drinks are strong. Okay, so it's like cow livers are what we eat. Okay. I've never eaten liver before because I just think that's gross. Even though I've had cow heart before.
You've had cow heart before?
Yeah. I went to, Ben took me to this restaurant in New York. I think it's called Cannibal. And it just has like all of like the weird things. Like it was a cow heart burger. And, like, you could get, like, the bone marrow shots and stuff at the restaurant. Like, it's all the weird meats and stuff. It was interesting.
I mean, shout out to Ben for usually the most and best restaurant recommendations. But I'm going to go with a no on that one.
Don't knock it till you try it, man. The cow heart burger was a little bit chewy, though. It was, like, tough. Like, kind of had to, like,
it's a
muscle that's really strong. So,
oh no. Oh god. Okay. Well,
back to people spitting out livers on stage.
So it's through these faith healings that he gained his most loyal and rich fan base because they all wanted to be healed because they all bought into it. But they were just never picked because they weren't planted.
Right.
He only picked the people that were planted in the audience.
That makes more sense.
Yep.
Than sleight of hand.
Yes. Yeah. So in 1962, Jones started preaching the idea of setting up a new temple location and fears of a upcoming nuclear holocaust. Jones read that Belo Horizonte in Brazil, this place was listed as a safe place in the events of a nuclear annihilation, so he planned a trip to visit it. On his way there was where he made his first stop in Guyana. Jones stayed in Brazil for only a year before he headed back to Indiana. 1963, Jones warned the temple that the world would be engulfed in nuclear war by 1967, which would lead to a new socialist Eden. In order to be safe, he said that he had to move the church to California. After moving to Ukai, California, where he started bringing full socialism and communism into his preaches. By the 1970s, Jones started completely denouncing Christianity and referring to their God as a sky god, and said the Bible was a tool used to oppress women and non-whites. So a few quotes from Jones. Those who remained drugged with the opiate of religion had to be brought to the enlightenment of socialism. If you are born in capitalist America, racist America, fascist America, then you're born into sin. But if you're born into socialism, you're not born into sin. You're going to help yourself or you get no help. There's only one hope of glory, and that's within you. Nobody's going to come out of the sky. There's no heaven up there. We'll have to make heaven down here.
How does he get these people who are from a Methodist church to this point? Just baffling.
It's the long con. He
built the foundation with them. At this point, they trust him.
Right? Like, yeah. This is 20 years?
Yeah, they've been following him making? For a while.
Yeah, so he started, I think, in, like, the early 1950s, and this is almost the 70s now.
Yeah, wow. This is the very long con.
Yeah. Very long. So by the early 70s, the temple saw a boom in growth, and they opened more branches in San Fernando, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. And due to the lack of growth in Ukai, Jones moved the headquarters to San Francisco. In San Francisco, the temple and Jones became influential in politics and held a huge role in George Moscone's mayoral victory in 1975. Jones was made chairman of the San Francisco Housing Authority Commission.
Oh, dear.
I mean, and when you think about it, too, like the boom in the attendance, I mean, he's preaching, like, you know, integration and everyone being equal. And that was like a huge thing back then. Like, that's what people wanted. So if they found a church that was, you know, hey, like, here, everyone's equal and good, and we're just like trying to do the betterment of society, like, it seems tempting until he starts getting off the rails,
right?
You know,
I mean, it is tempting, and then I don't understand where it goes crazy.
Mm-hmm. He's very charismatic.
I mean, all these cult leaders are, right?
Yeah.
You have to be. These people are manipulative, very smart people.
Very smart. So Jones made friends in politics with the heavy hitters in California, including Willie Brown, Jerry Brown, Mervyn DeMille, and Harvey Milk. Willie Brown even went as far as saying that Jim Jones is what you should see every day when you look in the mirror. He was described as a combination of Martin Luther King Jr., Angela Davis, Albert Einstein, and Mao Zedong.
Wow.
This description alone lets you get the understanding of how charismatic and powerful Jim Jones was, and also how he was able to get so many followers.
Isn't Harvey Milk? Why do I know that name?
He was the congressman or someone in the politics in San Francisco who was openly gay and was murdered by the Twinkie theory.
Yes.
Like, the guy who murdered him ate a bunch of Twinkies and then, like, shot him in his office.
Yes. There was a movie about this.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Who was it? Sean Penn was in it, I think.
I don't know. I'm bad.
And James Franco.
I'm bad at this.
I'm right.
Okay. Someone will correct us if Chelsea is wrong.
No, I'm right.
Yeah, but you haven't seen Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, so
I've seen Milk. I feel like I've seen it, I just don't remember it.
I question you. Okay, so this guy is super charismatic, being described as the combination of these prominent people, which is rather disturbing, because these are people that you actually look up to for their contributions to history, and this guy's not somebody who we look up to now.
Definitely not. So in 1977, Jones and several hundred temple members set out to create a socialist paradise in Guyana. Jones was an expert at talking and convinced the Guyanese government that with an American settlement near the border, they would help prevent attacks from Venezuela. They called their settlement Jonestown.
Haha.
Totally not narcissistic at all.
We've come here now.
Yes, we are at this point. We are at Jonestown. And Jonestown was like a work in progress since like the early 1970s, but they didn't move there until 1977.
I think this is where it truly becomes a cult, right? Because it's named after the dude that we're...
I mean, it's always been a cult, but this is where it gets real bad. And Jim Jones also at this point is addicted to like amphetamines.
Oh.
So he's just like super high all the time.
That's normal.
Yeah, totally normal. All right. So what people did not know is that once they got to Jonestown, they were not allowed to leave. Yeah. So temple members were promised a utopia in Jonestown, and over 900 people moved to Jonestown. A utopia, it was not. When people arrived, they found a dense jungle and muddy ground. Entertainment was in the form of Jones going over a loudspeaker and talking for hours about America's social problems and displaying videos of Soviet propaganda. Temple members worked 6 days a week for 11.5 hours a day. And then after they were done working, they would meet in the pavilion for classes on socialism. So, and these classes were like hours long. So basically the schedule did not allow for individuals to think for themselves or really give them time to talk with other members of the temple. What Jones did here is compared to the mind control and behavior modification used in North Korea and Mao Zedong's China. Children were surrendered to communal care, and Jones was called father and dad by both adults and children.
Oh, God.
He really flipped the switch quick.
Yeah, he got people to South America and was like, game on. Here we go.
Yep.
Basically, right? Like, this is completely different from... They're living in their own homes in California. They're not...
They're going to church.
Yeah. This is a once meet. This is a once a week, a maybe 2 to 3 night commitment when and we're they in California.
Helped, yeah, they helped, you know, end, like... segregation and like champion equal rights and stuff before, and now they are working in mud and working 11 and a half hour days and then doing socialism classes at night.
It's like a complete, like,
it's a lot
change.
Yeah,
it's a lot to take in because it's Jesus.
Yes, agreed. Couldn't have said it better.
I don't even, I mean,
while in Guyana, Jones claimed that he was the biological father of John Victor Stowen. Though the birth certificate...
Who's that?
I'm going to get into it.
I'm sorry.
Though the birth certificate listed temple attorney Timothy Stowen and his wife Grace as the parents of the child, the temple repeatedly claimed that Jones fathered the child in 1971 when Stowen had requested that Jones have sex with Grace to keep her from defecting from the temple. Grace left the temple in 1976 and began divorce proceedings the following year. Jones ordered him to take the boy to Guyana in February 1977 in order to avoid a custody dispute with Grace. After Tim himself defected in June 1977, the temple kept John Stowen in Jonestown. He also fathered Jim John Chemo with temple member Caroline Louise Moore Layton. All right, so the kid is...
What happened to his wife?
Grace is in the United States somewhere. And it was to avoid...
Oh, so his wife was Grace?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And oh, so your own wife leaves you.
Yeah, which I'm confused about because later Tim created the Concerned Relatives group that brought the concerns to members of Congress and started legal battles to get Stowen's son back to him. So I don't really understand why he would, like, steal his kid, bring him to Guyana, and then be like, I want my kid back. Oh, well. So anyways, the Concerned Relative group started sending their concerns to members of Congress, and they started getting legal battles to get John Stowen back to the United States. The creation of this group and their battles caught the attention of California Congressman Leo Ryan. However, during this time, Jones's political allies continued to support him. Harvey Milk wrote a letter to the president that the people who escaped the temple were lying and were just trying to damage Jones's character.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
So prominent people are vouching for this dude.
Yeah, they're like, this guy is the best of the best. Like, people are just trying to destroy his character, and Jim Jones is only doing good.
That's scary that you're that influential.
Yeah, and I bet they felt real shitty after what happened.
Yeah.
Well, are these prominent people who are supporting him, they found out later on in their lifetimes, or...
I mean, they had to. Like, what happened in Jonestown was massive. Like, everyone knew about it.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah. And
I don't know. I asked my mom about mine, and she was like, if it was in the mid-1990s, I have no idea what happened during that time. I had small children.
Gotcha. So we'll get into what... We're very close to the end.
Okay.
Getting to what happens. So, boom, 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 boom. So even those people were defending Jones, concerned relatives continued. So Congressman Leo Ryan decided to head to Guyana and visit Jonestown. Leo Ryan arrived on November 15th with a few relatives of the temple members, a camera crew, and several reporters. Everything appeared fine in Jonestown, and Jim Jones even hosted a reception for the visiting people. However, things took a turn when temple members passed a note to one of the reporters requesting help leaving Jonestown. After escalating tensions over the time that Leo Ryan was there, the group decided to leave with 15 members of the temple who wanted to defect. Jones put up no resistance to the group leaving Jonestown. However, he had his armed guards follow the group to the airstrip. Once at the airstrip, one of the defectors was a fake and opened fire among the group. The guards that followed opened fire at the group and ended up killing 5 people, including the congressman Leo Ryan, reporter Don Garris,
oh shit,
cameraman Bob Brown, photographer Greg Robinson, and temple member Patricia Parks.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
So you were allowed to leave, but only so far.
Well, he only let them leave, I think, to not give them, like a panic at the camp. Okay, you guys leave. I'm having my armed guards follow you and murder you away from, you know, the camp so it doesn't cause mass panic.
Right, because there's like 900 people here still.
Yeah.
5 people, 15 people leaving is not going to
be
a blip, really.
Exactly. So later that night, Jones called a meeting where he recorded the 44-minute cassette tape called the Death Tape. He called for his members to commit revolutionary suicide. When people argued that there were other options, a therapist joined Jones and assured people that it was going to be a beautiful day with the possibility of reincarnation. Temple member Christine Miller and others that were dissenting the suicide became quiet after the guards came back from the airstrip and Jones announced that the congressman was dead. The guards then took guard around the camp to ensure the temple members stayed in Jonestown. At this point, the volunteers for the suicide began. The first in line were mostly mothers with their infant children, where they would syringe cyanide mixture into their mouths. Death took about 5 minutes for children, less for infants, and up to 30 minutes for adults. Most people present quietly waited their turn to take the grape flavorade and cyanide mixture.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And so this is where you get the don't drink the Kool-Aid. Even though it was actually Flavor-Aid that they drank, but this is where it comes from.
Yeah.
This is where that comes from?
Yes, this is where that comes from. Don't drink the Kool-Aid.
I feel so betrayed by history right now.
Where did that you think it came from? That
is so much darker than I thought it was.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Kool-Aid man was just a 90s commercial where he was just a large red... pitcher.
He destroyed people's houses all the time by busting in and like, you want some Kool-Aid? Like,
with some cyanide?
I
don't know. It felt much more innocent than what this is.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll ever say that again. That's just, I don't know.
So I've definitely said that to people. Say, don't drink the Kool-Aid. Now you know.
Now you know why.
I feel horrible now. That I feel like that's more horrible than anything else you've told me so far.
So there were so armed guards stationed throughout the camp. And if you tried to leave, they would shoot you. So this was kind of like a choose your own death scenario. It's like either get shot by the guards or drink the Kool-Aid. And in this death video, not video, but the cassette, you can hear the people's screams as people started to die. And Jim Jones said this as, like, people were screaming and, you know, absolutely terrified. He said, "I tell you, I don't care how many screams you hear. I don't care how many anguished cries. Death is a million times preferable to 10 more days of this life. If you knew what was ahead of you, if you knew what was ahead of you, you'd be glad to be stepping over tonight." So as the members died, the guards then took poison themselves. 918 people died at Jonestown that day. Of those who died, 276 of them were children. Jim Jones died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. So he wasn't even man enough to take his own cyanide. That would have taken 30 minutes for to, like, kill him.
Right.
So what a bitch. And then with the death of Jim Jones, that also ended the People's Temple. The recovery for Jonestown took 3 days, like, and it was all military. United States military volunteers were flown down to Guyana, trekked through the jungle, because Jonestown was, like, located, like, deep in the jungle. Like, it was some rough terrain. And, like, these bodies were sitting in South American heat for 3 days before people started clearing them out. Yeah.
That's horrible.
And it was just really sucky. And then in Georgetown, which I think is the capital of Guyana, there was another family who was, like, in charge of, like, the intake for Jonestown. And when they heard the radio call for what happened, they killed themselves. It was, like, 5 kids and, like, 2 adults, and they all just, like, killed themselves.
Oh, my God. I thought my cult was bad with the one baby being the Antichrist. No.
So, yeah, that's what that is.
Well, you've ruined Flavor-Aid. Kool-Aid.
It's Flavor-Aid.
Flavor-Aid, Kool-Aid, you've ruined them all.
Yes. All of them. So that's Jonestown.
Also, a fun thing about Jim Jones is that when he first started out, he would sell monkeys door-to-door as pets.
What?
He sold monkeys
as pets? He sold pet monkeys.
But yeah, door-to-door? Yeah, he would go door-to-door, like,
selling monkeys.
Here, you want my monkey?
Yeah. You want a monkey? I got a monkey. You want a monkey?
That is random.
That is so weird.
That's your snap. Your Snapple fact on Jim Jones.
You're welcome.
Snapple fact.
No, we should have a Snapple fact corner.
Oh my God. Just came up with a new concept. So the cult I'm going to talk about is a 9-part docuseries on HBO. I did 9 hours on this. But I'm going to keep it to, like, 15 minutes.
The one that's about to ruin my childhood?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Allison Mac.
I think I'm ready.
Are you ready?
For my childhood. Gave that to be booty ruined. A smack.
All right. Karina,
can we cut that song that I made out, please?
Yeah. No, I'm going to keep it.
Very appropriate.
Okay, so Jackie's about to ruin my childhood right now.
I am. I really am. So I am going to talk about Nexium, which is incredibly recent. The leader of this cult was actually just received his sentencing 2-3 weeks ago. October 27th is when he got sentenced. So there's no death involved, but it's still really fucked up. Nexium was founded in the 90s by a man called Keith Raniere and a woman named Nancy Salzman, and it was developed as a self-help company. So they marketed these self-help, better-yourself courses. They catered it to the wealthy, to people that wanted to get rid of insecurities, better their personalities, become successful. And it did become...
That's the worst.
They provided, like...
You prey on people who are just, like, down.
Exactly what they did. And they would bring them in for these courses that were meant to empower their members. And it became wildly successful. It was also incredibly expensive. So the first course, which was 5 days by itself, was $2,700. So it catered to a lot of people who worked in Hollywood, a lot of CEOs, a lot of people working in the business world, or particularly the ones who ended up following or falling into what ultimately became a trap. So it was praised consistently during the 90s. For changing people's lives. The Dalai Lama even went and spoke at NXIVM and to commend Rainier and the work that he was doing. So the public...
What's with all these prominent people supporting these horrible, shitty things?
Because as a front, that's exactly what it looked like. It looked like this marketing company. As a matter of fact, if you go on Google and you search NXIVM, which is spelled NXIVM, the first thing that pops up from Wikipedia is not anything about the cult that it ultimately was. It is still listed as this marketing self-help company now, today, because I Googled it today. So
I'm doing that right now.
As a public front, it was this successful company that helped create CEOs and better people's lives, where what was really going on is it was a front company to lure in these vulnerable young women to become Keith's sex slaves, essentially, is what it ended up being. So a lot of this is very similar to what the both of you already talked about. So there were ranks in the cult. So the more courses you created, the higher up in the organization you became, you got different color sashes, which would identify you as what rank you were in. They would also remove their shoes. There were other ritualistic practices that fell into the curriculum that they were getting while they were on these campuses. They also, the members all signed non-disclosure agreements, so they could not talk to
anyone. That's the biggest red flag.
Yeah, come take this course.
If someone comes up with a non-disclosure, right, of my hard pass.
come take this course, but you can't talk about it. Like, sign this NDA, you're not allowed to speak about it. And then, oh yeah, take off your shoes and pay $2,700 to listen to this guy talk. So it was a very high-level manipulative game. There were spin-off groups within the organization. So the women's only group was called Jeunesse. There was another group that was men, only for men, that was called the SOPs, or the Society of Protectors. That was the men's only group. And then what started the media frenzy around this cult is in 2017, an actress named Sarah Edmondson outed the company for what it was, which was this sex cult. So part of NXIVM, there was an ultra secret women's only segment called DOS, or Domenico Obsequious Sororium, which I'm not going to give you the exact translation out of Latin, but it basically it means lord over obedient female companions is what it means. So the
fuck?
The women that were...
And the men's group is called
Society of Protectors. Like the protectors. Yes, that should tell you.
I hate everything. I hate everything.
Tell you all you need to know. But I'm going to keep going. So Sarah was a former member of DOS. And she told the New York Department of Health that she went through this initiation ceremony to become part of this ultra secret women's segment of NXIVM. And that as part of the initiation, she was required to provide naked pictures as collateral and send them to Keith, to the leader, as an insurance policy. So pretty much it was understood that once you go through the initiation, you gave this collateral, which was either naked pictures of yourselves or videos, with the understanding that if you tried to leave, remembering that a lot of these women are prominent figures who are known, these pictures and videos would be made public. So it was an insurance policy for the group.
See, what did they think they were getting from it, though? Be like, because if I join some group, they're like, send me your nudes. I'm like, no.
Well, they were tricked into thinking it was this, like, empowerment, women's only empowerment group. And I'll get
in. And you got that from putting in your nudes?
No, well.
Like, I'm not trying to victim blame at all either. Like, I'm just...
curious. It's because, and I'll get to this, it wasn't just Keith. He had a close circle of women that were mararketing this group for him. So you're getting into this group from other women. You're not getting into it from him himself. And that's the part, Karina, that's going to ruin your childhood. I'm sorry. So,
yeah. But see, Chelsea, you wouldn't want to join a group like this. You would have stopped at the nudes.
Yeah. No. No nudes for me.
Yeah.
I don't think people want nudes from me either, so it works out pretty well.
Yeah, but you thought you wanted all this structure, but as soon as they put on the structure.
I already told you I changed my mind. Prison would be much better for me. I just need that daily structure in life. Like, when I went to camp as a kid, like, that was the best. I have to be up at this time. We have breakfast the same time every day. Like, it's that structure. It's just like, at the conference, oh, beautiful, because I have
everything laid out for me of what I need to do. No, that's not cult. It's okay. That's not being part of a cult.
You can just be your own type A personality and schedule your exactly. own life that way.
I'm so lazy, though. I need someone else to do it for me.
Lord. So,
Chelsea's in need of a type A relationship with somebody.
Yeah. Someone to schedule her day for her.
But I can't be with a guy who does that, because then I'm going to be pissed off. Because I'm like, fucking patriarchy, you don't owe me. It's a very catch-22. Like, I can't win with this.
Okay, we're taking auditions for a new best friend who is type A, who can contribute this to the group for Chelsea.
Plan out Chelsea's day.
So ruin my childhood, Jackie.
I will get there. I'm still in the initiation ceremony. So Sarah told the Department of Health about the pictures, and she told them that she was blindfolded, held down naked on a massage table, and was asked by her master, who was Keith, to be branded. And she was then branded with Keith's initials on her pelvis. And all the members of DOS were branded in this way.
I can't even get a tattoo.
Why
I can't
did they think this branded. Okay? Like, how did the first person think that this was okay? And how did it continue? Like, I know we talked about, like, hive mentality and stuff already, but it's like...
You're, at this point, you're so brainwashed. You're a believer. You're a believer. Yeah.
Nope. I can't even get a tattoo.
So, all members of DOS were required to be on call 24/7 at Keith's whim, mostly for sex. And would be starved or punished with being starved if they didn't respond to Keith's text within 60 seconds.
Did they live in like a communion kind of, not communion?
Yeah, that's
like
if a you were, so thing, it's right? assuming that the members who were in this society were high up in the pecking order, and the higher ranking members of the organizations did live in a commune. So, yes. Yeah. Okay. They were on a commune at this point, if they're a part of this organization. So
you've joined at this point, and you're living with these people.
Right. Exactly. You're within close vicinity. If you're in this society, in this sex slave organization, you're deep in the organization. You're not just coming in. You've been there for a while.
Got it. Gotcha. So I've moved. I live here now.
Right.
That makes sense. It's probably like a slow escalation to that point where they don't really think it's that much. Right. Like,
and you got to remember, they've already gone through Nexium's Kool-Aid with the empowerment courses and the brainwashing before they get to this point. So they're in.
Gotcha.
They're in it. But after Sarah went public, many other members left and started denouncing Nexium. So once that all, and there was a media frenzy around it. This is 2017. So we're talking end of 2017. So 2.5 years ago?
Less than three years.
Yes. Yeah. It's all very recent. So Rainier ended up fleeing to Mexico and was arrested in March of 2018. And he was charged with forced labor, sex trafficking, which he pled not guilty. It was during this time, they uncovered who exactly was in his inner circle and was recruiting these women. And one of those women was the actress Allison Mack from Smallville. So she was one of the head recruiters for DOS.
that was getting these women involved in this organization. Another one was Claire Bronfman, who is an heiress to Seagram's Gin. So she was another one who was very much involved in getting these women. So Claire and Allison were both charged with forced labor, identity theft, extortion, sex trafficking, money laundering, wire fraud, and obstruction of justice. They both pled out. So instead of standing trial, they both took plea deals. Allison Mack pled guilty to racketeering and Claire pled guilty to visa fraud. So they didn't stand trial with Keith. They said, you're on your own. Deuces. I'm going to take my deal and go. Neither one of them that I have found so far have been sentenced yet. So I don't know how much time they're going to spend in jail. But Keith ended up facing trial. He was ultimately found guilty last June of racketeering, sex trafficking, forced labor conspiracy, wire fraud, and wire fraud conspiracy. And it took the jury less than 5 hours of deliberation before they turned a guilty verdict. They had a lot of ex-members of DOS testify, and they told all sorts of horrific stories about how they were sex slaves for this guy, pretty much. He was sentenced on October 27th of this year to 120 years in prison, and he was also forced to pay a $1.75 million fine. That is Nexium. Light, Nexium Light. If you wanted the full details, HBO did a documentary series called The Vow, which I have not watched yet, but I will now because I do want to know more about all of this because it's terrifying. But like, how did you get these women to sign up for
it,
this?
Like, it has to be the escalation, like slowly, like, oh, like, it's crazy. Self-help, and then, oh, like, just do this, and just adding like one extra layer each time. Yep. But like the branding part, like, I don't get how.
No. I think we're still playing the long game here. If it started in the 90s, we're just, things fall apart 20 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're still kind of playing the long game here.
Definitely an escalation.
Yeah. I just thought it was wild that if you Google Nexium, it's still like a self-help marketing company in Albany.
Somebody take that shit down. Really?
And then, like, all the articles after that are about the sex cult, but that it's just that first hit is like, what? Wait, what?
Yeah, on the Wikipedia page, it says, type, privately held company, industry, multi-level marketing, personal development.
Yep.
This is why you can't read Wikipedia for all facts.
Where I got all my information for today, though.
Didn't you ever do a research paper?
I've also listened to... Yeah, I think I said it last episode where I'm like the scholar I am, I will cite my source, but like the scholar I'm not, I got it all from Wikipedia.
Yeah, but you've been deep in this true crime world.
Yeah, I know a lot about like Jonestown.
Yeah, yeah, you knew it all before this podcast. This is my first introduction to a lot of these things.
Yeah.
It's my own research.
I'm so excited. I was telling Jackie before you hopped on that we need to do an episode of Find the Thing That Will Gross Karina Out the Most.
Challenge accepted.
That's not what I'm choosing for next episode, though.
So what are you choosing for next episode? Because you're up next, right?
I am. I will be leading the next episode. And the theme will be overthrown monarchs or leaders.
Oh, nice. That's a good one.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good okay.
One. And that, and my drink for that episode is going to be the AMF, the adios motherfucker.
Very suiting.
That is a fitting theme.
I chuckled quite a bit when I paired the two. I was like, just like laughing to myself in my room maniacally.
Oh my God. Well, I am
excited to cover that next time. We'll see how that goes.
It should be fun. There's lots of options.
There's lots of options. Well, thank you for joining us on this week's episode. We're excited for Chelsea's next time. If you want to follow us on Instagram, it's Tipsy Depraved Podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's Tipsy Depraved. Come follow us. Come check out our fun memes. And our theme song, That Rock. Shout out to Jackie's future husband. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks. Fill of the jingles. Thank you. Be safe. Don't drink and drive. Make good choices.
Toodles.
Bye.
Bye-bye.